I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you for listening. We've been having a little technical difficulty this morning, but we seem to have solved it by dint of Molly's determination not to be defeated.
I will not be defeated.
I, on the other hand, did absolutely nothing. Just looked into the middle distance.
And you gave moral support.
And crossed my fingers. That was the extent of my moral support. However, it is an absolute pleasure and privilege to be back with you. I've had COVID, but I've recovered. I'm now testing negative again. But I've left with a few residual symptoms, i.e. a kind of lethargy and a bit of sort of half cold. You know, I keep thinking I've got a cold, but I haven't actually. I'm just recovering. And the more people I talk to, who they all have to say the same thing. You've all got lingering symptoms, they're called.
That's not long COVID.
No, I haven't got long COVID. That's a much more serious issue. But I've just got lingering COVID.
Oh, is that a technical term?
I don't know. I know it came from the BA2 strain, the more transferable strain.
Is that Omicron? Deltacron?
Omicron BA2 is it's current dominant strain in this country. That's why we got 9 million people with COVID last week.
Got the highest rate of COVID we've had ever.
Ever, yes. Except none of them have terrible symptoms.
No.
All manageable symptoms. So you've got to look on the bright side. I have to say I was very fortunate. I have a friend not much younger than me. He had very bad symptoms. He had the whole gamut of fever and terrible headaches and rasping cough and all of the above. I just got mild flu symptoms, but it took quite a long time to go away. A good 10 days. But I did report it to the NHS, so I'm obviously one of the figures.
I love that for you, Dad. Reported your positive lat flow.
Yep, I did.
Have you stocked up now because you can't get them anymore?
I did. I have a very helpful chemist.
I had no doubt. I was thinking about that. Dad has a very good relationship with his chemist. I thought if anybody in London has managed to get the secret stock of lateral flow tests, it will be Geoffrey.
Yes, I have a very kind chemist whom I have developed over the years a very good relationship with. And he helped me, as they say, on the last day, on the 31st of March.
Yeah. That does not surprise
me. So how was your week, mate?
Oh, yeah, by the way, we need to announce the people who are winning prizes from our Patreon quiz.
Oh, yes, we must do that.
I think the answers are up on Patreon now. Perhaps we'll go through them at some point on the podcast so people can hear just how hard that quiz was, because it was pretty wild.
And so the winners are?
The winners are, in no particular order, i.e. you're all winners. Long-time listener Phil Brown.
Ah, well, special Phil Brown. Good for Phil.
Long-time listener and friend Carol Wood.
Wonderful.
And another listener we don't know as well, Becky Porter.
Well done all of you.
Well done all of you. We will be in touch and we're going to send out some prezzies.
Yes, but you've got to give us our address so we can put them in the post.
I'll sort that, yeah.
Okay.
We'll be in touch about that. Yeah. And also, we've got some extra prezzies to send you, donated by another listener who sent me some special things. I'm not going to say what because it was a surprise.
Yep.
But your Instagram handle is leopardprintb. And thank you very much because I've got them.
Oh, thank you very much.
They're really cool. And we're going to send them to you. Send them out as prezzies.
Good. That sounds wonderful.
Well, that's good, isn't it?
It's very good. It's better than good. It's wonderful. So have you had an exciting week, Mo? I've been self-isolating, so I haven't had a...
Have I? I don't think so. No, I'm just busy.
Okay. Well, that's par for the course for you.
Mm. But no, I don't have nothing else to report.
I should do some stuff for Patreon.
Yeah, you should. You should do that.
I can do that on my desk, can't I?
Yeah, I showed you how to do it, haven't I?
Yeah. I just got to transport, send it to you, and you send it to Instagram.
Or Patreon.
Or Patreon. Patreon, that's what we do.
Yeah. Yep. Yes, you should do that.
I'll do that. I'll make a little habit of it.
Okay, great.
And send some stuff. Look, commentary on the week, really.
Yes, that was what we talked about.
Yeah, I think that's good. That's a good idea. Because, you know, there literally are stories coming up every day. Masses of them, actually, to be honest. True crime stories.
I know.
And all the stuff that we're doing and have done begins to emerge. I mean, I've seen endless podcasts tramping back over ground we covered at least 3 years ago.
That's very true. Are you saying we've been doing this a long time?
Yeah. 4.5 years.
Yeah. We have been doing it a long time.
It sounds like a long time. Yeah, well, it is. It's been great fun.
It's been
enormous fun. It's huge.
Really,
I mean, yes, a bit gloomy, but I was terribly impressed by that kind lady that wrote to me, said she listened to us when she goes to bed and I send her off to sleep. I thought that was wonderful.
That's good. They're not really interested in what we're saying. No, it's just your soporific voice.
It's my soporific voice. I regarded that as a huge compliment. Thank you so much. Mostly, though, I just read books. Well, I have to read books anyway, but I read a lot of books. Some of which are really very, very good, and some perhaps not quite as good. But they're all there, piled up in front of me, like a series of accusations. Why haven't you read me?
Oh, Dad, I mean, it's been like that since we've been doing this.
Yeah, it has. It has.
No one's feeling sorry for you.
No, okay. I'm not feeling sorry for myself. Okay, I promise you that.
Which case, fine. We better get on with it then.
Well, let's get on with it. This is a story suggested to us by Susie on Instagram. And it's a story of two murders committed by one man. But they are particularly wicked stories. The two ladies concerned are Helen Bailey and Diane Stewart. And the man concerned is Ian Stewart.
What are we calling it?
I'm not sure what we should call it.
Should we just call it Two Murders?
Two Murders, yes. Two murders, identical in form, and he almost got away with it. As you all know, as our listeners know, I like stories where they almost get away with it,
yeah,
and then they're caught at the last minute.
Yeah.
I have a great affection for that.
All right, well, let's hear this one.
Okay. This story begins with a murder. The first murder. Now, the murder happened in Royston in Cambridgeshire. And the lady who was the victim was actually rather well known. She was called Helen Elizabeth Bailey, and she was born in Newcastle, or near Newcastle-on-Tyne, on the 22nd of August 1964. She wrote 22 books, and particularly she wrote 5 Electra Brown books, so teenage novels. And at one point she was called by the bookselling association the Queen of Teen.
Queen of Teen.
Yes. She married in 1996 after being together with a chap for 7 years. So she was quite young when she met him. A man called John Sinfield, who died, remarkably, by accident, drowning in the sea off Barbados. I mean, it was a freak accident, to be honest.
Well, he just got caught in a riptide.
Yeah, absolutely. He drowned. And Helen Bailey went on to write really a very moving blog about it. It was called Planet Grief, which turned out to be a book, eventually became a book called When Bad Things Happen in Good Bikinis. Because she said, I was wearing a bikini and I didn't believe anybody could die in front of me. She's sitting on the sand and he goes into the sea.
Never comes out.
Never comes out. Well, it doesn't come out alive anyway. So, you know, she's a very a talented woman. She'd written short stories. She'd written a picture book. I mean, she was enormously talented and had done pretty well. She became something of a national figure on grief, on losing your husband. And she was on Woman's Hour and various television programmes when she brought the book out. But there can be no doubt that Helen Bailey was badly affected by the death of her beloved husband, John. He died in February 2011, as I say, on holiday in the West Indies in Barbados. And when she got back, she started this blog and then joined a widows and widower website. Shared experiences.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, this is what happened to me and here's how I felt. And
yeah.
Well, one of the people she came across on this website was a widower called Ian Stewart, who had lost his wife, apparently to suddenly, some years before. Anyway, the two people, Helen Bailey and Ian Stewart, strike up a relationship. And indeed, eventually in 2013, they move in together in a big house. She has quite a good estate. I think the house and her estate are worth about £4 million altogether. I think she's got about £1.8 million in cash, and there's the house, and then there's a flat in Broadstairs in Kent, which is a sort of holiday home.
Mm-hmm.
I know, they're comfortably off, comfortably off. But on the 11th of April 2016, this is quite a recent story, Helen is reported missing by Ian Stewart. By this time, they're engaged. She's his fiancée.
Mm-hmm.
And he claimed that she'd left a note saying she was going to stay in their flat at Broadstairs in Kent. Well, Helen's brother and her mother called this completely out of character, and the police described it as perplexing. Helen doesn't reappear. The police search the house that she shared with Ian Stewart, really rather thoroughly. Nothing's found. Until finally, on the 11th of July, in other words, some 3 months later, Ian Stewart is arrested. After the discovery of Helen's body in the second cesspit. There were the house quite large. It had one cesspit for the house. It had another cesspit which served the garage and was under the garage. That was the one that hadn't been searched. Now it was searched and they discover Helen and the body of her dachshund.
Oh, no.
Yes. Who's been dumped in the cesspit too. Daxon's called Boris.
I really hate this guy now.
Mm. You'll come to hate him more.
No one's going to kill, I mean, poor Helen, but poor Boris.
Yes. Well, not surprisingly, on the 16th of July, Ian Stewart is charged with Helen's murder. He says he's going to plead not guilty, and indeed does plead not guilty when it comes to trial in January 2017 at Stourbans Crown Court. Opening the case for the prosecution allege that he had been drugging her with sleeping pills over a prolonged period of time, and eventually he smothered her. You might say a heinous crime. I mean, after all, he said he loved her. They'd proposed. They were going to get married. Helen's brother told the jury which I think is a wonderful piece of sidebar, that Helen at one point had joked to him about the second cesspit, saying it'd be a great place to hide a body.
Hmm.
And Ian had overheard this conversation.
Hmm.
The jury also heard that on the day she disappeared, in April 2016, he'd altered a standing order from her account to his account from £400 a month to £4,000 a
month. Why was she paying him £400 a month in the first place?
What a good question.
I can tell you something I shan't be doing.
What's that?
Paying my partner an allowance.
Oh, I don't think you would be, darling.
I mean, I don't have one, so it's not an issue, but I wouldn't do it.
No, well, I'd rather agree. Giving evidence, Ian Stewart insists to the jury that two men called Nick and Joe had kidnapped Helen.
Changed the standing order in his name because they thought you probably needed more cash.
Claimed that they'd kidnapped Helen and the dog and that he hadn't told the police because he wanted to preserve her safety. It will come as no surprise that in the closing argument, the prosecution said this this explanation was quite absurd.
Yeah, it's rubbish.
And that what had happened, of course, that, and I quote the prosecution again, Helen had been love bombed by Ian Stewart in the wake of her bereavement to the sadly drowned John.
The drowned fellow.
And his plan all along was to
take her for her cash.
On the 22nd of February 2017, the jury found Ian Stewart guilty of the murder of Helen Bailey, and he was given a life sentence with a minimum term of 34 years. A long time, you might say.
Yes.
The detectives involved in the case called him, and I quote them, a greedy, wicked narcissist. And he was also described as obsessed with money. He was an absolute skinflint. Whenever he went anywhere, he would never pay for anything. If he went to the bowls club, he wouldn't pay for the tea. He was that sort of man. Talking about a man who's, you know, of mature years. Following his conviction for the murder of Helen, the police decide to investigate the murder or the death of his wife Diane Stewart in 2010. They believe that the circumstances may be suspicious. At the time, her death was attributed to sudden unexplained death from epilepsy. She had been an epileptic, but hadn't suffered an epileptic fit for 18 years.
You can still have, like, adult sudden death syndrome, can't you?
Yes, yeah. In August 2018, Ian Stewart is arrested and questioned. He's in jail, of course. He's arrested in jail and questioned about her death. Sometimes later, he's charged with the death of Diane Stewart. Her body, however, has been cremated.
But likelihood is he was using the old sleeping tablet situation.
Bear with me.
Okay.
Bear with me. The forensics suggested, and the forensics are based on microscopic slices of her brain, lung and heart. She's bequeathed them for medical research.
She had that, they did an autopsy. No, not a proper one.
That she'd bequeathed certain elements of her body for medical research.
Okay.
And ironically, Ian, her husband, had agreed that they could be saved for medical research. Had he not, they would all have been destroyed.
He would have got away with it.
Okay, so he stands trial. In January 2022. Not long ago.
Hmm.
This time at Huntingdon Crown Court. The jury hears that Ian Stewart had received around £100,000 following the death of his wife, Diane. He sold the family home for $530,000 and put some of that money towards the house he moved into with Helen Bailey. This is all very quick. Let there be no doubt. I mean, Diane Stewart died in 2010, and by 2013, he's moved into a house with Helen Bailey, and by the end of 2011, started a full-blown relationship with Helen Bailey.
Yeah.
Had he not been convicted of Helen Bailey's murder, he would have inherited £1.8 million plus the house, plus the flat in Broadstairs. The forensics, as you quite rightly guessed, suggested that Diane had indeed been suffocated. No doubt after having been drugged in much the same way as poor Helen Bailey.
If you get away with it once, you see, I think you can get away with it again.
But without Ian Stewart's agreement, and I think it says a great deal about his extraordinary vanity, he would never have been tried for the murder of his wife, Diane Stewart, because there would be no forensic evidence to speak of. The forensics were what played against him. Naturally, the police and the prosecution provide medical support for the theory, and in particular, one of the medical witnesses says the chances of having had another epileptic attack after
that
18
long.
Years is about 1 in 100,000. Plus, of course, the prosecution made some play with the fact that Ian Stewart did not act like her grieving husband. On the day after her death, he went out and bought a sports car. Because he said he thought he needed to cheer himself up.
Oh, good idea.
He was described by the senior detective who brought the case as a master manipulator. And I don't think that's an unfair description. He certainly manipulated Diane Stewart, his wife. They had two grown-up sons, incidentally. No children with Helen Bailey. Helen Bailey had stepchildren. It's John Sinfield's stepchildren. Both women were killed while they were alone in the house with Ian Stewart. He's a deceitful monster, really. When the jury convict of his wife's murder, the judge gives him a whole life term. In other words, you're never going to get out
of
jail.
Never going to get out.
He shows no remorse, no contrition. And again, I do recommend, if you look it up on the internet, there's some very good police interviews with Ian Stewart in which he displays not a shred of concern. He just keeps tapping his foot or nodding his head. I mean, he's really non-cooperative. I think one of the police officers said he thought he was superior to all of us. He thought he knew more than we did. And I think that's what I mean about this incredibly extraordinary...
There's a lot of arrogance in that, isn't there?
Yes.
Thinking you get away with that.
Yes. Not once, but twice.
And imagine how powerful he would have felt getting away with it the first time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he's been described as many things, controlling and manipulative, arrogant. I would simply say I believed he was wicked beyond belief. I mean, he's targeting women who he's professed love for. He's not killing random women. He's killing people with whom he's close.
Yeah.
And he's doing it for what?
Money.
For lust and greed, isn't it? Greed, really. And as you quite rightly say, and I completely agree with you, he's doing it for power.
Yeah.
So he's doing it for money and power. I think that makes him very, very creepy indeed. And I think we've said this a couple of times recently about stories that we've done. It really is a drama.
Yeah.
It's a drama.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, This is a man who knowingly drugs and then over a period of time and then smothers one wife and then another wife, or almost a wife, a fiancé.
Yeah.
It really does take my breath away. I mean, because it's so intense, it's so domestic. This is a case of domestic violence.
Yeah, true.
It's violence against women, but also domestic. This is mad. You know, they went to the supermarket together. They went on holiday to Broadstairs together.
Yeah, like building all that trust up with somebody.
Yes, I mean,
and it's founded on nothing.
With his wife, he has two sons.
That is insane. Blech.
Who, by this point, when she dies, they're one's 18 and one's 21. But by the time he moves in with Helen Bailey, they both set off, you know, flown the nest and gone separate paths. But they treat Helen Bailey as, you know, very warmly.
Yeah.
Now, who's being let down here?
That's awful.
You know, that if you want to send a shiver down your spine, Ian Stewart's certainly the man
to do that to your children.
To do it. You've killed their mother, and now you ask them to cozy up to the woman who's replaced her, whom, incidentally, you just happen to have killed, and then you go on to kill her too.
Yeah.
This really does make my jaw drop.
That's wicked.
But I have all compliments to Susie on Instagram. I had been thinking about doing this case.
Oh, really?
Yes, I had, because I think it is a very interesting one.
Mm.
And it's very new. It's very recent.
Mm.
And I've been thinking about it and thinking, oh, yeah, that's the chap that murdered his wife beforehand.
Mm.
It's the murder that hit the headlines was, of course, the murder of the authoress, Helen Bailey. But, in fact, it's a far wickeder crime even than that.
Yeah, for sure.
It's an absolutely dastardly, despicable act of domestic violence against women. It makes my skin creep.
Yeah.
It really does. And he's a man, you know, certainly should have known better. I mean, he's not poorly educated. He's not... And these weren't acts of rage. These were premeditated.
No, premeditated for a long time also.
Yes. With only one objective.
Mm.
Really.
Well, terrible.
Well, how about that?
Two murders.
Two murders.
There you go. Thank you, Susie. Thanks, Dad.
That's a pleasure. I do compliment you, Susie. As I said, I had been thinking about doing this case, but you prompted me to go back and do it. And I really enjoyed it. I really enjoy the story.
It's a good one.
It's very good. You've had some very good stories recently.
Well, we have, yeah. Good recommendations from listeners. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much.
We appreciate it.
Yes, we do. Very much. What are you going to do this coming week then, Mo?
We've got a company social.
What's that mean?
That means we have to hang out as a company.
Oh, right, okay.
We're going to one of those places where they enforce fun on you.
Oh, God.
Flight Club. You have to play darts.
Oh, I like darts.
Yeah. Well, there's like a bar that you can go to where you can play darts now.
Oh, I used to play darts a lot.
Oh, well, I should take you, because I don't have any darting skills.
Oh, I very, very, very long time ago, but I used to play at darts in the local pub.
They're, in Hendred?
The Wheat Chief.
The Wheat Chief. They have all of the sorts of these things now. They have one for shuffleboard. You can go and play shuffleboard and drink at the same time. They have a darts one. They have a ping pong one.
Oh, well, around the corner from where I live, they have a bowling alley.
There's a bowling alley. What other ones do they have nowadays? They have crazy golf, like mini golf indoors.
Yes, I never liked those crazy golf courses where you had to put it through the windmill it used to drive me mad.
What else are the other ones? You can do axe throwing.
I don't think I'd want to do that.
No.
Do you all have to go and play darts then?
Yes. Well, I mean...
Is that bonding?
Yes. Apparently.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I had a rather bad experience with darts when I was a child. I went around to play with my the children of my local doctor. Fortunately, he was a doctor, because one of the children threw a dart and it went into the eye of someone.
Oof.
A child. Fortunately, it didn't go into the eye itself. It lodged itself just on the outside. But it could have been very, very nasty.
Yeah.
So
they're dangerous things.
They can be dangerous.
Yeah.
So because what happens often is if it hits the wire in
it
the dartboard,
bounce.
It bounces.
Yeah.
So you don't want to stand too near.
Yeah. I probably won't play darts, but I turn up because I'm an important person and I lend moral support. Probably that not that many senior people will go.
Okay. Well, I still think it's a good thing to do. I'm in favour of that sort of thing.
Go and hang out with my people.
I mean, you could say I'm still doing that at my age. I'm still hanging out with
I've actually got a company social dinner with a client and then a press night and another press night. So I've got to go out every single night bar Monday next week.
What's the press nights? Can you remember?
One is this little thing that Nathan's doing at Hoxton Hall and the other one is a play that Ethan's doing at Southwark.
Okay.
Nothing too glitzy.
No, Hoxton, that's not too far from you.
That's really near me, yeah. Hoxton Hall's very near me.
Yeah, I think I've been there.
It's on Hoxton Street Market. It's on Hoxton Street. But
yeah, I think I've been there.
Yeah.
And what's the one in Southwark?
Southwark Playhouse. It's called I Know, I Know, I Know. It was meant to be at the Vaults. You know the Vaults Festival?
Oh, yes,
but
yes.
But it didn't happen because of COVID. They decided not to run it and then they managed to get a little two-week run to down at Southwark.
Okay.
But it's very busy for me.
Well, I think you thrive on it, my darling.
Mm-hmm.
So shall we thank all the people?
Thank you to all the people that help us. Our producer, Sam Brain, my brother Dan, who did the music, my friend George, who drew our caricature, to Jeffrey for all the hard work, and to, oh, and Audio Boom for hosting us, and to you, the listeners. Thank you so much.
And I join Mo in thanking everyone who helped us, and of course thanking her for coming up with this idea in the first place. So do be careful out there.